The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
What occurred to me to talk about is this, this perspective of why we practice. I think sometimes after we've been practicing for a while, we may just get into the habit of practice and kind of lose touch with the motivation in some ways. I was talking to somebody the other day and I asked them, why are you practicing? And even after a couple of weeks of reflecting on it, they said, I'm not really sure, but I do know it helps. I do know it helps. And so that's actually, as we see that, as we see how our practice helps, that becomes part of the motivation. When the Buddha started his journey, he began kind of by this reflection on, a reflection on impermanence, basically. That, why am I looking for happiness in places that just are so unreliable for happiness? Looking for happiness in terms of sense pleasures that don't last, looking for happiness in terms of things that tend to fall apart. And this is a deep habit in our minds to look for satisfaction, to try to find ease and peace in ways that are not terribly reliable. And this is not like surprising. The movement of our habitual minds, it's not just our minds, it's human minds, and it's our cultural perspectives that tend to, this culture really values greed, for instance, that greed is really elevated, and they don't think of it that way. They talk about, safety, security, etc. But the motivation for that and the way of going about it is through trying to get, to have, to hold on to. And so this is like, this is the habit of our cultures, of our, and also I'd say our humanness. It cuts across cultures. These habits around looking for happiness, looking for well-being in very short-sighted ways. And some of this just has to do with our evolutionary biology. We tend to, as living creatures, move towards what's pleasant, move away from what's unpleasant. And that, as we see that there's a little bit of ease as we move towards what's pleasant and get what we want, that becomes a reinforcement for doing more of that. As we see, moving away from what's unpleasant, that we feel a little better, that becomes a reinforcement for that, not only that movement, but also the motivation behind why we did that, the greed, the wanting to have, the aversion, the wanting to get rid of. And so those patterns of greed and aversion become our motivations for so much of what we do. And underneath those patterns is essentially a delusion. And you might hear me talking about the three things that the Buddha points to as in the way of a true happiness: greed, aversion, and delusion. The delusion in that movement, getting what I want, that movement of greed to have something pleasant, that the delusion under that is that will produce a lasting happiness. And we may not think consciously, you know, that, yes, having that whatever little hit of pleasure is, or getting rid of that thing that makes me feel uncomfortable, that will produce a lasting happiness. But that's what our minds think. It's kind of shocking, actually, as we begin to really recognize how our minds work, to begin to investigate, to be curious about these experiences of greed and aversion and how they work in our minds. We start to see that I remember a time seeing this around just having some chocolate, you know, a piece of chocolate. Chocolate, the happiness of chocolate, you know, it lasts for maybe a minute, you know. It's actually, I was kind of surprised at how long the gratification for happiness actually lasted, you know. It lasted longer than the chocolate in my mouth. You know, there was just this feeling of like, yes, okay, you know. And there was just this little bit of this movement, even in just like the chocolate, in a greed for chocolate, seeing really that wanting, that movement. There was something in that wanting that I could see that was like, this is going to do it for me. It was kind of surprising. You know, that movement, that basic movement, even around something really small and simple, the mind, that the greed believes it's going to make us satisfied. And likewise with the aversion, you know, when we have that movement to push something away, there's an underlying delusion that movement is what's going to make me happy. And yet what happens there essentially is that that movement of greed, we get that little hit of that moment of greed. We get that moment of having the thing that we want. And that reinforces the well-being. There's a little bit of well-being there. There's a little bit of a sense of, I figured it out. You know, a little bit of that sense when I can navigate to get away from something that's unpleasant. I figured it out. That becomes a reinforcement for that motivation of greed and aversion. And so the next time we feel a little bit uncomfortable, that's what's motivating us. We're motivated by that greed, by that aversion, which is underpinned by the delusion that having and getting rid of will make me happy. That's the way to happiness. And so this reflection the Buddha had at the very beginning of his journey, it's like, why am I looking for happiness in those places? Is there someplace else that happiness might be available? You know, something other than this endless cycle. I mean, we're kind of like, you know, hamsters on a hamster wheel of just endlessly trying to get the things that we want, get rid of the things that we don't want. And that itself is kind of exhausting. You know, that movement to just have and get, and oh, that one went away, better have something and get something, or oh, there's something unpleasant, let me get rid of that. Okay, next thing. It's kind of exhausting. Only we don't normally recognize that exhaustion. You know, that's like, because we are not living in the experience of the moment, of what the experience of greed, what the experience of aversion is, we're not feeling the exhaustion of it. We're not feeling the stress of it. We're not feeling the tension of it, because we're focused on the idea of what it's going to do for us. Well, this is part of the way our minds work. And, you know, that we can kind of model the future and think, okay, if I get that thing, then I'll be happy. And we then kind of live in that idea. That idea is pleasant, of having that thing. That idea is pleasant, of getting rid of that thing. And so we're missing actually that we're suffering in the present moment, because our minds are caught by an idea. So the Buddha began to be curious about this whole pattern, this whole like curiosity. And the very first understanding that he articulated, or so it's said in the suttas, the first teaching he gave on the Four Noble Truths, that there is suffering, you know, and we think of the suffering, often we think of the suffering as the not having or the being with something that's uncomfortable and unpleasant. We think that's the suffering. The not having is the suffering, or the uncomfortableness is the suffering. And the Buddha began to look for actually what's going on there. And in his own mind, he began to see that the suffering isn't the fact that I don't have something. The suffering isn't the fact that I'm associating having something unpleasant. The suffering is the wanting to have the thing or to get rid of the thing. And so his first exploration is like, okay, what is suffering? He began to be curious about what is this experience of suffering? We think it's the not having, we think it's the not getting rid of, but it is the wanting to have, the wanting to get rid of, that the Buddha began to see, is that's actually where the suffering is. When those release, there's no longer that experience of a problem. So, you know, this comes back to the First Noble Truth, that there is suffering. And the Buddha's encouragement to us about suffering is that it should be understood. That's what he did. You know, that's how he explored his experiences. What is suffering? How does it work? Okay, I think I'm suffering because I don't have something. What's going on there? Well, there's this wanting. There's this feeling like I don't have something. There's there's that part itself. And as we start to actually be curious about this understanding, not through thinking about it, not through trying to figure it out intellectually, but by feeling. So this understanding that the Buddha is pointing to is an understanding that comes through direct experience, feeling the experience. And so this is pointing to mindfulness. You know, it points to the capacity we have to know what's happening in the present moment while it's happening. And yet this capacity itself, we could say, is kind of inherently neutral. You know, it's in the suttas, even in the descriptions of mindfulness in the teachings of the Buddha. Usually when mindfulness is referred to, it refers to right mindfulness, a kind of mindfulness that is imbued with a particular perspective, a perspective of wanting to understand the experience, wanting to understand the suffering. And the movement, as we begin to understand suffering and understand that actually the participation of our own habits of mind in creating the experience of suffering, the movement is that suffering begins to weaken and release. And so there is a letting go. There's a releasing of that suffering. And it's not something even that we have to do. It's a natural course of the seeing. Because habitually, as I said, we've been kind of caught in the ideas, you know, of, oh, you know, anger, that anger will help me to get rid of this thing or to change this condition. And we're living in the idea of the result of it, as opposed to recognizing the experience of anger itself is here and now painful. There is suffering here and now. Our system does inherently not want to suffer. That's good news. You know, our system, our mental physical system wants to move away from suffering, wants to let go of suffering, wants to move in the direction of well-being. But fundamentally, it's been operating with delusional perspectives. These perspectives that greed and aversion will be how there can be well-being, how there can be ease. And so as we begin to be curious about experience as experience, begin to recognize this is what the experience of anger is, this is the actual experience of being angry. The body and mind, and through mindfulness, begins to understand with some wisdom that that experience itself, the anger itself, is suffering. And because our system inherently wants to move in the direction of not suffering, that information, which is usually information we miss because we're caught in the idea about what the anger or the greed will do for us, because we're getting new information, the system begins to basically move away from those habits, to release those habits. It's a slow process, but it does happen. It's quite a natural process that begins to unfold. So this, the perspective of mindfulness, of wise mindfulness, is, you know, it's really the wise view, beginning of the path, you know, what's described as the beginning of the Eightfold Path, wise view. There's some classical definitions of wise view, and one of those is understanding suffering. You know, that first noble truth, the action associated with the first noble truth. There's wisdom in that. Understand suffering, not through thinking about it, but through noticing in experience. What is this experience right now? So that's one of the classical definitions, is the statement of the Four Noble Truths, that there is suffering. Suffering should be understood. That understanding of suffering begins to lead to the letting go of the craving, that greed, that aversion. It begins to lead to that letting go. And then there's an experience of the release of suffering, a different kind of release from suffering than the kind of release from the suffering that we get when we get something that we want. You know, when we get something that we want, there's a little bit of a release there, but it's been motivated by that wanting. And so it tends to reinforce the wanting as the way to get that next thing. So the release from suffering that the third noble truth is pointing to is the letting go of the greed and the aversion, the release from the craving. So the Four Noble Truths is a kind of a classic definition of wise view. And I think that first noble truth, the understanding suffering, is really key. And that becomes embedded in what becomes wise mindfulness. So in the suttas, as I said a few moments ago, usually when mindfulness is referred to, it's referring to wise mindfulness, but there are also references to wrong mindfulness in the suttas. And so that those references make me understand that mindfulness is a neutral quality. It can be motivated by the wholesome, by wisdom, by compassion, by kindness, by that movement to understand, by curiosity. It can also be motivated by greed, aversion, and delusion. So you know, an example of this kind of sense of, you know, can we be aware, be mindful, and be caught in an unhelpful perspective? You know, just imagine or think about, you know, going up to somebody on the street who's angry. You know, you see them angry, and you could stop them and say, you know, do you know that you're angry? And they'll go, yeah, I know I'm angry. And yet that question, you know, so that question, you know, the knowing they're angry doesn't mean that you might then say, perhaps think of asking him a second question. Are you curious about what it feels like to be angry? Probably they would look at you like you were crazy. Like, what are you even talking about? You know, I'm angry because of that thing that's happening in the world, and that needs to be changed. That needs to be fixed. And so there's that perspective of, you know, there's not a perspective of curiosity about what is the experience of anger. And in caught in that loop and caught in that anger, you know, caught in that space of like, this thing in the world needs to be fixed. And, you know, I can appreciate that perspective. There's something in that. There's things in the world that need to be fixed, things in the world that need to be changed. And there are different ways to go about that than anger. Compassion, for example, is a motivation for action in the world. Compassion is a motivation for trying to support a movement away from the suffering, so much suffering happening in the world. So compassion can be that motivation. But when we're caught in that anger, anger believes that it is the way to that result. It does not understand that there are other possible motivations for acting in the world. In that moment, somebody caught in anger believes that the anger is necessary in order to do what they think needs to be done. And this is a kind of a, often a kind of a misunderstanding around what it means to be mindful. You know, we might think, you know, we explore this mindfulness of like, okay, let's notice. What is the experience of anger? What is the experience of greed? The anger goes away. There's no longer a problem. There's no longer a feeling of suffering around this thing that is unpleasant or this thing that's, you know, challenging in the world. There's no longer a sense of stress around it. Why would I act if there was no sense of stress? That's the perspective of anger again. You know, this perspectives of greed and aversion tell you, if it weren't for me, you would not do anything in the world. I'm necessary. Greed and aversion tell you I'm necessary to do anything in the world. Again, they don't understand that there are other motivations. Wisdom can motivate. Compassion can motivate. Kindness can motivate. Love can motivate us to act. And it's a very different experience. And so we have that curiosity around looking at experience as experience. That simple instruction. What is the experience that's happening now? How does it feel? Begins to help the mind to understand not only that aversion feels like suffering, the greed feels like suffering, but that compassion can arise as a motivation, and that the feeling of the relationship to what's happening in the world, very different when motivated by aversion and by compassion. The experience, I mean, the experience in the heart with compassion, it feels like a quivering, you know, we feel the suffering of the world, but we are not constricted around it. Our minds are not tight and demanding. It's more of that capacity to hold it and maybe hold a lot of things and make decisions not based on our immediate, like, habitual patterns around greed and aversion. A very different perspective. And it's such a simple shift. You know, sometimes, so this why we practice, you know, we often do come to practice to find more ease and more happiness in the world. I certainly came to practice from that perspective. It's like, what I've been doing hasn't been working. I mean, obviously, I've tried the best I can up until the time I was 35. It's like, I've tried the best I can. I give up. I don't know. I have no idea how I can be happy. I was pretty miserable. And right at that moment, I was fortunate enough that somebody sent me a book about the Dharma. It was good timing. And in that book, the person in that book, I got the idea about maybe I should like see what it's like to feel anger rather than just acting on anger. I did not understand why that would help. But I had pretty much hit bottom, and I couldn't think of anything else to try. So I was like, well, I might as well try that. I'll see what happens. And within weeks, there was some understanding about why it was valuable. So it doesn't take our minds long to understand that this shift of perspective from being motivated by needing to have and to get rid of to being curious about what is the experience right now? That curiosity about what the experience is right now doesn't mean that we become these lumps that just don't do anything in the world. To the contrary, we become very active participants in the world that begin to be motivated by very wholesome movements of heart.